2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Thursday the 14th of April and this is Game On. Coming up today, well, we have a Friday Fields Today show, as tomorrow we'll be bringing you commentary from the Aviva Stadium of Leinster versus Connacht in the Champions Cup. So today we're looking ahead to the weekend's action. Bernard Jackman is in studio to preview those second legs. In Gaelic Games, Aisling Connolly and Shane McGrath are with us to talk Camogie and the championship throw-in in hurling.
You've got your own chasing ball the size of your fist.
Plus, David Snaid is in studio to look back on the Champions League action and look ahead to the next instalment of Klopp and Guardiola's mutual appreciation. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Welcome along. We have some very loud music still on air, so we are going to do our best to get through it. I'm delighted to say that David Snaid and Bernard Jackman are with me in studio, and they can definitely hear me. Can't you, lads?
I was going to say, it's taking the Friday field off.
We're just...
I've been to one in about 2.5 years.
That's all you're looking for, a gig in Ibiza in the summer.
Well, we have lovely atmosphere anyway to get into what we are going to be going through. So, look, there is a lot to chat about this evening. And let's start with Tiger Woods. Like, Tiger Woods coming to JP McManus's pro-am, Bernard. When we think about big stars, you don't get bigger than him and you don't get more excitement than seeing him coming along to an event like that.
Yeah, I think it really hit home, you know, the first 2 days of the Masters when everyone was just talking about Tiger Woods again and his box office, and obviously himself and Mr. McManus have a long-standing relationship, and he promised to come and he's coming now, so it's going to be a brilliant event, and I think it's going to put this event in a dare manner back on the world spotlight again.
I think to give you an insight into the draw and the pull of Tiger Woods, not that anyone does, but even my father-in-law, straight away, on to me, you get tickets now, what's the story, Tiger Woods is in town.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he is, like, he's generational, like, if you get to see him play, then...
Although, did you not think it was a bit strange? I did think, like, I'm not mad into the golf, but obviously you watch the Masters because it's the Masters, but, like, they were going mad for showing him, like, the bloke was on about 11 over. He was like hobbling around the course, and you almost felt bad for him that he decided to keep on. You wanted to see a bit more of Shane Lowry. You wanted to see, like, even Rory. But, like, it was all Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. Maybe that was because it was the American kind of production and they have to get their feed and all from that. But I don't know. I think maybe the story was the first couple of days of Tiger getting back into the Masters, and then afterwards, maybe you could have just left him be and let the patrons, I suppose, that you have to call.
I suppose for TV companies, they're not sure he'd be back again, do you know what I mean, as well, so you're kind of trying to stick with him and you're obviously hoping something happens,
yeah.
You know what I mean, like,
yeah,
a moment of magic,
yeah,
or whatever. But I agree with you, yeah, like, for the guys who were leading or in the hunt, they didn't probably get the coverage that they deserve or normally would.
Yeah, because even the press conferences, while you're listening to Rory talking, there was a little Tiger cam beside him on the screen, and, you know, just watching him out in the driving range, seeing what he was up to. But look, I think while he's still in the sport, he's going to have a massive amount of interest, so we might as well enjoy him and try and appreciate him while we still can. David, there's been a bit of a change to the Republic of Ireland summer schedule, so it has been rejigged to accommodate the World Cup qualifier between the Ukraine and Scotland. Ireland were set to open their Nations League campaign against Ukraine at the Aviva on June 4th, but they will now begin away from home, taking on Armenia on the same date. Does that throw plans up in the air a little bit? Is it an inconvenience?
Well, only from a freelance journalist point of view, when you're looking at the flights trying to get over to Yerevan, you're looking at how long it's going to take. But no, I don't think so, because I think even Stephen Kenny spoke about, obviously they knew that the negotiations were going to be in place with between UEFA and Ukraine and come to some sort of arrangement. So I don't think it was a case that those games weren't going to happen. It was just finding a way, and they've been planning to have four games in that window. So from in terms of plans, other than maybe the travel side of things, that would obviously has altered now, because obviously you've got Armenia away on June the 4th, then you've got a home game with Ukraine on the 8th, then you've got an away game with a home game then with Scotland on the 11th, and then a neutral venue a few days later with the Ukraine. So it's gonna be a bit of a departure in terms of having four games in an international window. There, you've got like four games in 10 days. It's going to be a big test of a squad that's already beginning to look, it's going to be a little bit depleted. Like, we're looking there now, like James McLean's probably going to be a doubt for it. Andrew Omobamadeli definitely won't be involved. Stephen Kenny confirmed that. Adam Eady the same, he won't be involved. Josh Cullen suspended now for the first game too. And Matt Doherty, the latest kind of casualty after that, that knee, you think it's a knee meniscus injury he's suffered in that tackle with Matty Cash against Aston Villa, which is a huge blow, really. Is even just for Doherty, like, I think
because we were watching him playing so well. Yeah. So you're looking at him and he is growing in confidence week after week, and you're kind of seeing what he can do at this stage of his career, and you couldn't help but imagine him in the Ireland team and with all the games that were going to be coming up, and obviously the hopes and dreams we have for Stephen Kenny's side as well.
But it's just one of those points where, and it's just the nature of management at international level, be it rugby or whatever, where like there's so many variables that are out of your control, like in terms of injuries, players who are out of form, players who aren't getting a game, stuff like that. And this is just something that Stephen Kenny has to handle. The fact that, if you're looking at it, trying to spin it in a positive way, it's the fact he has got a bit of time now to be able to at least prepare and get his head around it and say, right, he knows that he's not going to have Matt Doherty available. He knows he's not going to have Andrew Omobamadeli available, and even Josh Cullen, that's going to be a massive one, the fact that he won't be there for the first game, because I think if the yellow card he got in the previous campaign now follows over, but if it had been in the playoff it would have been an amnesty, so that's a bit of an issue. But these are just the facts he has to get over, really. And the fact is as well, he's been in the job for a couple of years now, he's got pretty much an established settled squad. Although he did kind of mention that a new player, CJ Hamilton, had kind of declared his basically he qualifies now to play for Ireland. He's at Blackpool in the championship, and Stephen Kenny had said that he didn't want to be doing as much kind of like messing about with his squad, and he had things pretty much settled and everyone knows the system and all the rest of it. But when these little circumstances come up, you have to kind of take a look at it. And like, even just the hardy of CJ Hamilton, it could be an interesting one if he does get involved. Like, I spoke to Graham Coughlin about him, who was a manager at Mansfield a few years ago, one of the few actually Irish managers in England. Well, he was at the time, he's not in the job at the moment, but he spoke about how CJ Hamilton, who would have his mother's from Waterford, begin to play in hurling, loved playing hurling, grew up playing hurling and soccer even in Carrick, and he was like around the training ground and he just had a bit of crack with him or whatever, and then like he told him basically Pog Mahon in Irish obviously, and then end up having a conversation with him in Irish, then starts talking to him about the GAA, and he's like what's going on, and he lets him know what the story is, and then here we are a few years later and he's in the mix now possibly to be getting called up. I mean, you look at some of the injuries that are happening in the squad and in the positions as well. He may even get called up, and even the fact that he said that he goes and watches Chidozie Benny quite a lot because he lives around that area, and he said basically the two of them are carbon copies of each other in how they play. Like, they are light and quick, and the thoughts of them together could be frightening in terms of giving Ireland a different way of playing on the counter attack as well, with a pace that they just haven't got. So it could actually be an interesting one to keep an eye on over the next little while to see how he does for Blackpool for the rest of the season.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds a bit like a Mac Hansen type story there, Bernard.
Yeah, Mac Hansen. He's something else, isn't he? He had some game last weekend, and I think tomorrow night, I'm going to the game tomorrow evening, but the four wingers on show, Jimmy O'Brien, James Lowe, Mac Hansen, John Porch last week, they all had really, really impressive games, and hopefully to get some decent ball tomorrow and make things happen. But Hansen is just so unorthodox. Even in warming up, you know the way warm ups are now, like synchronised, everyone's on the same page. He's just completely for the birds, you know, doing his own thing, distracted. But then, in fairness, you let him loose on a rugby pitch, and he knows how to get over the gain line and score tries. So,
but you need those lads, don't you? You need the renegades.
It's like that. Even when things are going well, but when things start to not go well, then they're always the first person to get the blame.
You know, I think Connor can't afford to try and play like everybody else and play a really, you know, tidy, you know, structured game. They need to have a little bit, think a little bit outside the box, and certainly with someone like him, they have that kind of X factor, that ability to be unorthodox, and that kept them in the game last week. Obviously, 5-point deficit coming back to the Viva, it's not easy, but they still are in the tie, and it's hard to see them, you know, getting through. But they are the type of team that, when it passes stick, their attack is brilliant. It's just a case of whether, like the second half, at half time last weekend, it looked like Leinster was going to pull away and put 25, 30 points on them. But they managed to slow down Leinster, source of possession at the breakdown. That was the Leinster had a man in the bin. Connor capitalised on that, got a bit of momentum, scored again. And it's whether they're able to repeat that. I don't think they will be. I think Leinster being able to bring in Andrew Porter and Ronan Keller this week is phenomenal. And yeah, it's a lot harder. Like last week, the atmosphere in the sports ground was really good. It boosted Connacht, not used to playing in front of full houses, so you could see it was emotionally a big game for them. But I think tomorrow could be a step too far.
When a team like Connacht, who have that that style and that flair, when they come up against a team like Leinster, can they play their own game, or to win, do they need to do something different to contain Leinster?
Yeah, I think with the ball in hand, they can. Like, their attack can go toe to toe with any team in Europe. It's phenomenally effective, and stresses teams. The challenge they have is their defence is also, it's the exact opposite. It's quite porous, and traditionally they concede a lot of points as well. So, and Leinster are usually really ruthless. Now, in fairness to Leinster played the last quarter in Connacht's half, in Connacht's 22 for most of it, and an area that they're usually really clinical in, they just didn't keep the scoreboard moving, and hence, you know, they went to kick the corner, Ross Byrne kicked it out in the full, and in the last couple of minutes they had a chance to again kick the corner, and they just took the points to make sure they had a 5-point advantage coming into this weekend. So I think the problem for Connacht is going to be stopping Leinster defensively over 80 minutes, and when Leinster got on the front foot, you know, they were getting the ball into James Lowe, Jimmy O'Brien's hands in space, and it was very, very difficult for Connacht to stop them.
What about their record in the Aviva in recent times, and also the fact that the Aviva does suit their style of play? Do you think that's going to come into play in any way?
Yeah, if you remember, they moved their home fixture against Ulster to the Aviva round 4 or 5, I think it was, and had a big win. I do think the Aviva suits them. It's a wide pitch. It's obviously protected from the wind and rain. Because Connacht are quite unusual in that, you know, where they play their home games isn't suited to that ball in hand multi-phase game that they play, but they've worked on their skill set. But certainly it'll be easier for them to play it in the Viva tomorrow night. And look, for them it's a freebie. No one expects them to beat Leinster. They've done the first part, which is keep the contest alive, and they'll come up the road with nothing to lose. But I don't know, I just think Leinster, like, this, the quality they have, the consistency they have, they have to, this group have to kind of get a European Cup to really justify, you know, their talent. And they obviously missed out last year to La Rochelle the season before, which was in the same calendar year, to Saracens. You know, it's time they won it. But look at, this is only round 16, and if they get through tomorrow, they've looks like they'll have Leicester to play, who are looking pretty strong as well.
Will they be feeling that pressure already?
I think there's a pressure. Yeah, I do think there is. I think if, like, some of these lads are some of them have phenomenal amount of medals and trophies and accolades, but they'll also, you know, they won't want to go 4 years without winning the European Cup. That's you know, in terms of investment, in terms of production line, you know, season ticket holders, all the metrics, Leinster are a European Cup winning team, you know, every year, every second year, you would say, at least. That hasn't happened, you know, since Joe Schmidt left. Obviously they won in 2019, but I think they would expect to be winning trophies, so I think that pressure will build internally. Yeah,
it's a tough one for Connacht, and I think especially when you look at that Leinster team, Bernard, and you're looking at them knowing it's improved again. Like, it's a better team now this week.
Yeah, it's a better team this week. And, you know, you've Dan Sheen to come on for Ronan Keller for the last 20 minutes. It's stronger in depth. And also they're building up game time together, you know. So Sexton goes again. Obviously, he's been playing with Gibson Park. Gibson Park was cited but didn't get banned. That's a big boost for Leinster. That back row, I mean, Doris, Van der Fleer, Conan, Ireland's first choice front row, and then obviously a bench with likes of Alatoa, as I said, Sheen, Ruddock, Frawley, Ross Byrne to come on. It's very daunting. I mean, look, I think if Leinster were playing at home to any team in Europe, even Toulouse, La Rochelle, he'd fancy him to win. So that's the challenge for Connacht. It's not just to win, but to get back those 5 points that they lost last weekend.
Okay, so you're pretty confident that it's going to be a Leinster win.
Yeah, look, I'm delighted it's still alive. I think Connacht did really well to show a lot of stickiness to stay in the game. But yeah, I just can't see Leinster letting this slip.
So Munster and Exeter, before we get into how the game is going to play out, what about Graham Rowntree? What kind of a role does he take now for that game, just given the fact that he is going to be the head coach, just not quite yet?
Yeah, look, there was some footage of halftime where he was getting very animated and people, I think, were saying, oh, that's the type of coach Munster need. By all accounts, that's rare for him. So, you know, we couldn't hear what he was saying, but whether he felt that, you know, he is the de facto head coach before it was announced, or whether he was just unhappy with an area of his game. But I think now he has to start acting like the head coach, because effectively it's official. He's got 2.5 months of this season left. He needs to make sure that whatever squad he inherits in July officially is in a good frame of mind and really believes in his ability to coach. So knowing Johan, he's not an aggressive or a dominant type personality. So I think there's going to be that vacuum now for Graham to just take a little bit of ownership. And it's always tricky when three other coaches are leaving and one guy is staying and he's stepping up. I mean, you'd naturally just let him take a little bit of a lead. So I'm fascinated to see. And it could be just the perfect recipe Munster need this week, going into a game against Exeter where, you know, obviously they got through last weekend, you know, in a decent enough position. But Exeter showed that they could trouble them. Just Exeter didn't really have that ability to convert opportunities like they normally have. And Exeter, in fairness, have been on the slide a little bit this year. They're in transition. So I'm fascinated to see the reaction the fans, the players give Munster. And, you know, they could really turn it around a little bit and have a decent season, end of season.
It's an interesting one, because, like, if this was in football, there'd be a sense that, oh, it's maybe one of the backroom staff stepping up. He's going to have to change how he interacts with players. You know, he could be seen as a player's maybe mate. He might be one of those who goes and says, oh, I could have you in the team, really, or this is what I think you should be doing. Is that the dynamic? Is that the same sense in rugby? Is there a different kind of culture around it, in the sense of it's a bit more understood and kind of accepted that this kind of thing happens, how a fellow would progress and take it all? Because it does strike me as if the dynamic is going to change massively between him and a number of players.
Yeah, it will, but I'd say that he'll get away with not having to make enemies, in terms of most of the contracts are already given out. You know, I'm not sure if Johan will say, look, at Graham's now picking the team. You know, if he does, then obviously that's a potential point of conflict. But it's different in football. Like, in football, Graham would have a team of coaches with him. You know, you'd know who they are. Mm. Where, you know, and they tend to move in packs. So, you know, Johan would bring his team to bat. I know he's bringing one other, but, you know, they're not coming together. Whereas now Graham has never been head coach before, so no one has any idea really who he'll put as his coaching staff. So the reality is, you know, he'd probably just want to make sure his area of the game is his performing, which is a set piece, and then wait till he gets his defence coach, his backs coach, to put a real shape on it. But he'll still want the team to show that they play for him. So it's a real tricky one, you know. Mm.
Bernard, you're always first in the news. Who's he going to put around him?
Look, I think there's no secret that he wants Mike Prendergast. The problem Munster will have now is that effectively it's going to be a lot harder to get Mike Prendergast out of Paris in April than it might have been in November, because obviously Mike has a contract with Racing, and they would have to find a replacement, and the replacements potentially that they would have looked at are probably locked in, you know. So it's far from ideal. Now we don't know if Mike wants to come home, but I think from Mike's point of view, a chance to be attack coach from Munster would be very hard to resist. But obviously there's a contract issue. There's lots of talk that Dennis Leamy's going to go down as defence coach. That'll be popular to bring in Mike Prendergast and Dennis Leamy, two sons of Munster back who've gone away and got their experience, I think is a good thing. And then will he go back to to the Leicester Tigers and bring someone that he worked with there. You know, he's got vast experience because obviously he's been with England, he's been with Georgia. So he has the contacts and the capacity, and the fact that it's Munster will make it relatively easy for him to build support staff. It's just who those names are, I think, and the quality they can bring is going to have a big effect on you know what he does in Munster. So it's a huge couple of weeks for him now to be able to get out there and recruit people, because he's never done that before. He also needs to have the backing of the IRFU, Munster, to pay the salaries that these people will demand and potentially buy people out of their contract.
Does that, as well with that, like, could he pay the price a little bit for Munster and say, oh, you're the few not being decisive enough on this?
Yeah, of course.
Even if the official announcement hadn't been made, but say he knew even a couple of months ago, listen, get your house in order here.
Yeah, look, I think certainly there's evidence or there's rumours that he was talking to coaches, but it's like, people talk to coaches all the time. Unless you have a contract in front of you, you know, it's worth nothing. So, but in fairness, he would have been building relationships and explained to people, look, you are part of my team, or you could be part of my team. But it's having that piece of paper which guarantees you the job for X amount of years.
Some solid to take lads around you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it has been a really protracted process, and you can only speculate really that it's been frustrating because it's taken so long, and for such a long time there has been so many different coaches associated with the job, but at least they do have their head coach now, so we'll see what happens. Do you think Munster are vulnerable at the weekend, Bernard?
No, I think they'll be okay. They're obviously not flying into this game in form. Their tack is really poor, or has been. I mean, not to take advantage of 15v13 against a team who were kind of on the ropes for a period, but they had some really brave last gasp defence, and I think they'll be better this week. But I don't think Exeter are the test that they were. I mean, they're definitely in transition. You know, they're starting to slip down a little bit in the Premiership. There wasn't a fortress that we thought Sandy Lane normally was, but Munster have a massive heritage in Europe. I think they'll bounce back and get the best out of themselves, and the best out of themselves is more than good enough to get through this round.
Okay, and then the final game, Ulster Toulouse. So we did hear Dan McFarland speaking earlier in the week and saying that famous win from last weekend would count for nothing unless they can back it up this weekend. Are they going to be able to back it up?
It's a tricky one. Mm-hmm. I mean, Toulouse, they need Europe, they're the champions. Obviously had a red card last week which affected the game, but I think if you look at a lot of the elements of Ulster's performance were very strong. Their set piece stood up, their defence was good. They got points when they had a little bit of dominance. So Ravenhill, that's going to be, for me, that's the game of the weekend, because Toulouse are incredibly talented, and given the way the top 14 has gone for them, I think that they could be desperate and dangerous. And Ulster, despite having, you know, a buffer, they'd have to be on the money to win. But I think Ulster are in a good place. I think they've developed some young players.
They're playing good rugby as well.
Playing good rugby, absolutely. And, you know, they had Dwayne Vermeulen, who's maybe not doing the same things that Marcel Coetzee did in terms of really big X-factor moments, but is that glue that keeps them all together, that confidence, that experience, that, you know, winning mentality. So I think Ulster could easily end up with a trophy this year. I'm not sure if it'd be European Cup, could be URC, but they're on the right track.
Okay, so you are predicting Leinster, Munster and
Ulster just about.
Okay, yeah. Great. Bernard Jackman, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us though. We'll be talking Gaelic games after this very quick break.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to Gaelic games, and I think everybody is very excited that the championship is back on, although it does feel like it is coming very, very early in the year, and we do have to, I think, readjust our body clocks for hurling to be on in the middle of April. But it is, Shane, and along with it is the round robin. How are you feeling about that? Shane McGrath, yeah, by the way, I should have introduced you at the start. Shane McGrath is with me here on the line. Okay.
Yeah, Marie Crosby.
You're like Rihanna there, where you're just one name, Shane.
Yeah, that's what I'm like now, Beckham. No, I think look, it's all good, Marie. I mean, Easter eggs, championship hurling, two good things to have there to look forward to at the weekend. I suppose the people maybe that aren't too happy about it, Marie, have to realise that the reason this has been done is we can have club action in August and September and, you know, allow the almost 99% of people that play GAA to get their club action in good weather and pitches and all like that. So look, personally, as someone has been lucky enough to do both, I'm all for it. And I suppose if you're good enough, your team will still be in it come July. And if they're not good enough, well, then it allows you even more time to have a really good club championship. So look, for me, Marie, I'm all for it. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but that's my personal opinion on it.
I think when you're in the middle of it, you can't really think about August. But when August comes, we'll probably be, well, everybody that's playing club championship, which is an awful lot more people than are playing intercounty, will be pretty glad of it. And then the intercounty players who usually don't get any break might get a little bit of a break or get a chance to go on holidays or at least plan a bit of a holiday. So the only ones that really lose out are the people who sit on the couch and like to watch the GAA in the summer, and that's about it. And I'm one of those people at the moment. Aisling Connolly also joins us on the line. Aisling, look, I was just chatting to Shane there, and I mentioned to him as well that because of COVID we didn't have the round robin for a while, but now it's back and we're going to get a lot of high quality games, and they're going to be at a nice time of the year as well, and you know, it's hard to see anything bad in that.
Yeah, hi Marie, hi Shane. Yeah, exactly. And from a Camogie perspective, it's brilliant because RTÉ have committed to showing 9 games, broadcasting them live, and all Munster Camogie fixtures this year are going to be played before hurling games. So that's great. They're going to be played in Semple Stadium, they're going to be played in the Gaelic grounds and in Ennis as well. So it's great a signal, I guess, of Camogie, and will raise the awareness of it as well. So all good, and lots of matches coming fast and take like the hurling.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we want. Shane, let's get straight into it though. And the big one this weekend for Tipperary people anyway is the meeting with Waterford, and Tipperary going into it as underdogs, which isn't a natural position really for Tipperary to be in.
No, it's not. And look, I'd be totally honest, Marie, and people might start thinking, you know, about playing a small violin for me here, but like it's the first year maybe in a long time that Tipperary people, like, you know, who know the hurling, will realise that this mightn't be a year that we might have, you know, we might be winning things, like winning Munster finals or winning All-Irelands. And I think that's great for the group. I think that the pressure is really on Waterford at the weekend. I think a lot of people realise with the names that we've lost, like, say, you know, we've obviously Brendan Pawdy are gone, so you can't count him. Mm-hmm. But Shamey being injured, Bubbles, you know, Bubbles' injury as well, stepped away, like, recently as well. So, like, If any team lost 4 of the calibre of players of those guys, they would find it hard to replace those. But look, we have some great young guys there. Craig Morgan has stepped in. He's done really well. I really like Dylan Quirk. Connor Bowe, Mark Hyo, Jake Morris is there in a few years. He's stepping up. You know, and it's a big year for likes of Mikey Breen, Jason Ford, Dan McCormack. So, like, I'm not saying that we're by far from a poor team. We have a very, very good team. You know, I haven't even mentioned Noel McGrath and John McGrath. I'm just saying that we're just maybe not as strong or where Waterford are at. For me, Waterford are at their peak right now. The third year with Liam Cahill, Liam Cahill stayed with him. He didn't come to Tip. He knew there was a really good group. He stayed committed to them. And because it's his third year with them, and Mikey Beavins as well, the coach, he has them playing, you know, and working the way and being a team the way he really wants them. And, like, I suppose it's what an advantage, Marie, for Waterford to have to say, Will Austin Leeson started the weekend. Because the group of forwards is going so well. Like, and I mean, a few years ago, Marie, if you said that, you know, Austin Leeson's back from suspension, guaranteed has to start. You know, I mean, it's a decision for Liam Cahill to make, because I was at the league final and, you know, nobody did anything wrong. Who might lose out? Maybe Mikey Kiley, but I feel that Waterford at home, they demolished us in the last quarter in the league down there. I just think they're going really well, and I think they're on form, as I said to you already, Marie, not on paper, but on form, they're the best team in the country. And I just think they are the contenders to the throne right now.
So for the listeners that aren't privy to Shane McGrath and I, our WhatsApp messages, we are constantly going over and back about who is the best team. And Shane reckons on form it's Waterford, but on paper it's Limerick. And I'd say we'll probably be discussing this for another few weeks and months anyway. It'll take a little while, I think, for it to become clear. And just Aisling on Waterford, so they are heading into this game, as Shane said, the form team, but there's an awful lot of
pressure now and expectation. And when you're in the Munster Championship, that's where you really need to be able to show that you can handle it. The league and all is great, but Munster Championship is the real battleground.
For sure, yeah. But I think, as Shane said, like, on form, they're the best team. They also have, they have a great panel, you know, and they've been building that on that over the last couple of years. They've obviously won the Club All-Ireland Championship with Ballygunner. And, you know, a real signal, I think, is that, as Shane said, Liam didn't go back to his home county tip, and he stayed with Waterford. So that's been immense. And, you know, they have De Borca, who's back from a cruciate. They've, you know, 20 Jimmy Barron to come back in, Austin Gleeson again, you know. So, like, it's, yeah, they have pressure, and that's always been, I guess, a kind of a holding them back a little bit, and they haven't won an All-Ireland since 59, and, you know, down through the years there's always that bit of hype, and they'll have to contend with that. But I think they're growing as a team, and they're getting used to that hype, and you know, I'm sure the management team will be really working on Waterford to make sure that they stay level and they just keep the form, and you know, deal what's in front of them. And you'd have to say that they are the biggest contenders to Limerick at the moment, who had a poor league, but I'm sure we'll see a different scenario from them on Sunday. But it's definitely going to be interesting. But it's you'd have to say, you'd have to favour Waterford against Tip. You know, Tip not to be rode off. They were 10 points up last year in the Munster final against Limerick at half time, but they've just lost some key players, and as Shane alluded to, and I think it's, they'll have a scalp at it for sure, but I think it's a step too far going on Waterford's form in the league.
Shane, is it as easy as saying that Limerick are going to be able to turn it on now for Championship, that this weekend against Cork, that we're going to see the Limerick that we've been waiting to see for the last few months?
I honestly feel if they had everyone, Marie, because of the group that they have and the panel that they have and the management team that they have, and in the form of Paul Kinnurk, the Pep Guardiola of hurling in regards how he sets his team up, how he gets the best out of his team. I just feel for Limerick that it mightn't be as clear cut as maybe everyone is thinking, because of the injuries they have. Now, Seamus Flanagan is out. Obviously, Peter Casey is injured as well. Whether he'll be back this year or not is questionable. I suppose massive boost for Limerick is he's Mike Casey's back. But to go back, no Flanagan. I heard a Will O'Donoghue is injured. Keane Lynch hasn't talked out for a couple of challenge matches. Like, you know, no matter what the team or what the group is, if you're missing key figures like that, and in particular Keane Lynch, I think, you know, you're going about, you know, you shouldn't man mark or anything like this. I feel when you play Limerick, you have to stop Keane Lynch. We couldn't stop him in the Munster final last year, and he won the game for Limerick. You know, everyone will remember Kyle Hayes' goal, and rightly so. But I'm telling you, from being down there and just talking to Tip lads, Keane Lynch was the man. He is the man when the need is most, when you need to win a ball, Keane Lynch is the man to go to. So if he doesn't feature, I think it's a lot harder. Saying all that, I do think they had the likes of Cathal O'Neill to come in, Colin Coughlin, to be massive, massive games for them, Marie, to give him a Championship going with 45,000 expected down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh there at the weekend. But I just think that, look around the field with Limerick, you're trying to stop one or two guys, but then maybe Limerick have 9 or 10 guys you have to try and stop, and no more so Garrod Hegarty, Tom Morrissey, I said Keane Lynch already. You know, I mean, their half-back line, Dean Burns, Declan Hannan, Kyle Hayes, is similar to that dominant half-back line Clare had in the 90s, Cork had, Kilkenny had. So I just feel that Limerick are coming. I think there's a lot of hurt there about people who have been saying them, that haven't been going well and all this. The other side of it then, Marie, is this is Cork's massive, massive day. Like, yeah, Didn't perform in the league final, and all the hurt that they had from last year. I've seen a lot of it now in the league this year when they really did turn over Limerick inside in the Gaelic grounds, but I think this one is massive for them. I think it's a massive for the Cork group, massive for the Cork fans, massive for the Cork management. I think they're sending out a message for the rest of the year if they can get a win down there, but I still think Limerick are going to do it.
Yeah, you'd have to feel that there is a performance in Cork after their disappointment in the league final, Aisling. And while we know that Limerick are going to get better at some stage, we're not sure when that's going to happen, because we just haven't seen it yet. But in the early stages of the league, we saw a lot of really good things from Cork that they should be able to bring to the table this weekend.
Yeah, they're on the comeback trail for sure. And, you know, last year in the All-Ireland final between Cork and Limerick, it was a non-event after, you know, a couple, 15, 20 minutes. I was at it and it was actually quite boring in the second half. And it was a bit of a joke because Cork, like, today didn't lay a hand on Limerick, you know, especially in the second half. And I go as far as to say that. So I think they will have learned immensely from that. And even in the league campaign this year, their tackling and their tenacity and their intensity has been massively upped. So, you know, I expect to see a big improvement from them, but like there are still major question marks on their defensive unit, in particular their full back line. So unless they solidify that and, you know, are very tight on Sunday, like Limerick do get goals, and I know they're missing a few forwards like Peter Casey, etc. But like with Cathal O'Neill, you know, potentially ready to come on and do some a job there for Limerick, and you know, the attacking forwards that they have, that they will have to be very tight in their full back line. Other than that, if they're not, I see Limerick winning this one.
What about Wexford and Galway, Shane? I don't think we've seen the best of Galway yet for various reasons. Wexford are definitely able to turn it on for stages, but then were disappointing as well. Just given this game, who do you think has more to lose here?
Well, like I tell you, it's hard to know, Marie. Like, I mean, I'm just looking at the fixtures here. Like, say it's Wexford, Galway. Then the following week, it's for Wexford, it's Dublin. Like, Galway play Westmeath. Like, I mean, if Wexford don't get a win this weekend at home, and you know you're trying to. You're hoping that you're going to beat Dublin. I think Laois and Westmeath will be the games that the other teams will target as being victories for them. And that's no disrespect to Laois or Westmeath, but that's being totally honest about the whole thing. Like, so that if Wexford don't get a win against Galway this weekend, and then you're going to then you're playing Dublin looking to get something, you know, it's a very, very difficult one to be in. Like, and if you don't get a win from your first two games in the round robin, I think it's, you know, it's an almost impossible task to try and qualify, really. Like, you know, so the fact that it's on down in Wexford Park, you know, you have two new managers in inter-county scenes in the form of Henry Shefflin on one side and Darry Egan on the other side. I suppose the last thing everyone will remember about Wexford is the beating that they took down in Nolan Park. But like, I think Darren knows how to get these boys back up and how to regroup them. And like it was at the end of the world, the last league semi-final. I don't think it is, Marie, because at the end of the day, it's often been said, it's about championship, like, and this is what they've been gearing for from day dot, like, since Dara took over and he got his backroom team in and got them all in together, saying this was the game, this is the target for them at home against Galway. So that's, I just feel that with everything that's going for them, anyone I've spoken to that has played championship down Wexford Park, listen to Richie Power talking during the week, it's just, he described it as a horrible place to go because it's intense. The crowd are in on top of you. There's a great following around Wexford there at the moment. And as I said, the last beating they took before the league semi-finals in the Walsh Cup, they came back and they played brilliantly against Limerick down in Wexford Park. So I think that Darrow will really have him up for it. Like, you know, I'm not sure if Lee Chin is going to play. He might have picked up an injury in the league semi-final. I'm not sure how that's healing for him as well. I also feel that the way Wexford want to play, you know, that the Galway defence mightn't have the pedals to try and cope with it. You see what Waterford did to Galway last year in Championship. They ran at them in Thurles, and you know they blew them away. I think Wexford have a kind of a similar game as well, and also in Rory O'Connor, very close to being player of the league for me. You know, he's in the form of his life. He's going to be a key man for them. So, and I also, and one more thing, Reid, I think that Wexford are playing a lot more attacking than we've seen in recent years. Fair enough, Dermot O'Keefe kind of plays a role where it kind of cuts out space, but if you look at them now, there's always two, maybe three guys up there that they can get ball up to. So I think the Wexkins will be out in force at the weekend. I'm going down there on radio duty as well on Saturday, hoping for a bit of sun down in the sunny southeast. And I fancy the Wexford lads to do it. Like,
what's the confidence like in Galway, Aislinn?
Well, it's a big game for us because, like the Leinster Championship, it's different to the Munster Championship, where you have like three, you have either three at home and two away, or vice versa. So the games that you have at away are very, very tough, and the ones that you have at home, you'd be hoping to win them. And the first two games are difficult for Galway. We've Wexford away, and then we've Kilkenny at home in Pearse Stadium. Now, we have a good track record against Kilkenny in Pearse Stadium, but it's, everything I've heard as well would back that up. What Shane was saying, like a siege mentality when you go down there to Wexford Park, and have experienced that myself playing Wexford Camogie down there, and it is very much that experience that I've had. But Galway, like, it's just the same old kind of story in terms of inconsistency the last few years. On their day, they're capable of beating any team, matched the best of the teams, like Limerick, in terms of physicality, have the capability, but just not showing that consistency to break through on and win, I guess, the All-Ireland final. And, you know, there was a huge excitement, I would say, when Henry Shefflin was ratified as manager. You know, a real, real buzz in Galway. So it'll be very interesting to see how that panned out in Wexford Park. But, you know, Conor Cooney is back, seems to be back to form, had a great campaign with St. Thomas's and man the match in the semi-final. And, Conor Whelan seems to be the one consistent player. And hopefully Cathal Mannion, you know, if he's deployed kind of up kind of in the forwards, hopefully he'll be a threat along with Connor, and then Evan Nyland again. Let's see how he works this year as well, in terms of growing on the last couple of years. But we're pretty confident, and it's a big one for us to win the first two games, Wexford away and Kilkenny at home, and that will hopefully then tee us up nicely for the rest of the championship.
Yeah, and it would be following on the back of some nice success for the Camogie team as well, Aisling, winning the National League there last weekend, and an absolutely super performance from them in the second half.
Yeah, and that's the story, isn't it, of the whole match, is the brilliant second half performance. So they were down 3 points at half time, and then Cork came in and scored a goal, so they were down by 6 points and ended up winning by 4. And you know, the subs or the finishers made all the difference. 3 subs came on and they scored 2-5 between them, with Carrie Dolan, you know, really shining and proving a point that she shouldn't be left off again. Niece of the great Trez Maher, she scored 1-4. And 3 from frees, but out of those 3 frees, she won the frees herself. She was immense aerial possession, and Catherine Finity all came on, scored a goal, and then Sabine Rabbit, you know, Joe Rabbit's daughter, who a famous Galway hurler, came on, a young girl herself, and you know, got the insurance point. So very, very positive performance from Galway, and they're really in a kind of golden era at the moment. You know, since 2019 they've won all but one cup, you could say. They've 2 All-Irelands and 3 National League titles since 2019. Saying that, like, Cork is, you know, they're always different come championship, and you know, it was just a puck at the ball, really. Well, like 4 points, but like, it was very, very close. And you know, they've lots of positives to take from it. They had 7 girls who played in Croke Park for the first time, and they have like lots of players to come back. They have like Orla Cronin to come back, Hannah Looney to come back, Sarah McCarthy from injury to come back, and then their new players, you know, Maeve Murphy and Leaventer was very solid in the backs, and Katie O'Mahony did a good job in midfield, you know. So and then the Daly factor, you know, what is he going to bring to the table? Like, they showed their tenacity, they showed that they were running off the ball and playing for one another and hand passing, and you know, there was lots of good pieces of play. So I'd expect them, you know, to be hurting from that game, but using it as fuel for the remainder of the championship. And one thing I would say as well, then they have the Munster Championship in Camogie is very competitive, and they'll build on that and they'll get more match practice, whereas on Galway that's not the case. We don't have a Leinster Championship or a Connacht Championship to play into, so they're not playing, you know, they've a little bit more of a leeway kind of on the round robin, and they're not playing until May.
Okay, well, lads, as you know, I could talk hurling all day, but we have to take a break and get on to the football. But Shane and Aisling, thank you so much for joining me, and Shane, enjoy the weekend. We all hope you get a bit of sun down in Wexford. We'll talk to you soon.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I'm delighted to say that David Snaid and Bernard Jackman are still with me in studio. David, there is kind of two schools of thought about last night's Champions League game between Atletico and Manchester City. Some people really enjoyed what was happening from the Atletico side, and some people were totally outraged and thought it was anti-football. What camp do you fall in?
Well, first of all, I didn't think I'd be able to make a comparison between Wexford Park and the Wanda Metropolitano Stadium in Madrid, but thankfully, thanks to Shane calling Wexford Park a horrible place to go, I can. Like, you can look at it a couple of ways in the sense that, like, what Atletico Madrid were doing and the level to where I went to, I think overstepped the mark a little bit, because also, when you look at it, it didn't get the desired result from their point of view, so it didn't work. Like, all the aggro afterwards in the tunnel, that happens, especially at this stage of elite sport in GAA, these occasions where there's so much on the line. Like, Atletico saw their one chance of how they're going to actually beat a Manchester City team, and it was by doing exactly what they did, and they weren't good enough to do it. So, like, I know people joke, oh, it's not what you want to see. Of course you want to see mass brawls of players, because, like, you see these superstars on TV and you want them to know that they actually are a little bit human and they feel that passion that you feel, because sometimes they might, especially with Man City, sometimes you might get that sense that they're just a bit robotic and they go through and do exactly what they have to do. But it just reminds you that passion is there in the game. The best team went through over the two legs, which is probably the most important part on this. And if you're kind of looking at it from the point of view of City and what this could mean for them, like, this could be huge. Like, I don't know what Bernard thinks about this in the sense of even just what it can do for a group of players, because in terms of a dynamic, but like, City have fallen short in the Champions League. They got to a final, they've got beaten, they've got to semi-finals before, they've obviously made it through, they've been knocked out when they shouldn't have been knocked out, and it seems to be that the Champions League is just kind of a monkey hanging off their back a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, that is basically what Pep Guardiola was brought in to deliver. You mentioned earlier about Leinster and how Leinster are a team who should be winning European Cups. Like, Man City weren't that team. Man City for so long were the team who just had to survive in the top flight of English football, and that was good enough. Everything's changed obviously since the takeover, and it's gone to a whole other level since Guardiola took over, and for all the success and how he's transformed the club and even just how he's reshaped modern football as a coach, he hasn't been able to do that yet with the European Cup, by winning the European Cup. But for something like this, when a group of players come through a test like that, when so much is put up to them, and it's a different kind of test, it's not just of your footballing ability, it's of your character, of, I don't know, kind of your togetherness as a group of players and of teammates and pulling in together. And like,
yeah, because sometimes it does feel like there's an awful lot of individuals out there playing the way that Pep wants them to play, and they're really good at doing that. But last night it did feel a little bit different. It felt like they were playing for each other.
Yeah, and there can be moments like that. Like, there can be moments that they look back on as a group of players in dressing rooms afterwards and, like, would just do more for them than going out and hockeying them 5-0, which they could have well easily have done on a different night. Like, something like this can actually be that extra little bit of leaf that it could be their year to actually go and do it, because it's something that's clearly has been the case. There's so often it's thrown at Guardiola where he mixes things up unnecessarily with his squad or with his team in selections. Like, you remember in the final last year, he didn't
remember
he dropped Rodri, he didn't play Rodri, and you're kind of thinking,
who had played every game and played brilliantly,
and it's a staple even now, it's a staple of that team. So stuff like this can just maybe bring a group of players together regardless of the sport. It just kind of can galvanise them, and I think for something like this with City, it could be possible, because you look at what's going to be happening now, the amount of games between them and Liverpool neck and neck for the league title. Obviously, this weekend it's the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. Like, earlier on in the season, we were thinking it's going to be an amazing season because it could be three of them. Chelsea obviously dropped away, faded away. But the way it's shaping up now, and even how Liverpool obviously were able to make 7 changes and totally pretty much rest the team from the previous weekend against them, but if he can still go through, like, it's just shaping up to be so, so exciting for the rest of the season. Unless, of course, you're a Man United fan, you just want to close the blinds and you never want to look at TVs ever again.
Bernard, in the GAA, it's called the siege mentality. Is that the same in rugby?
Yeah, it is, and I totally agree. I think it could be a turning point for them. Not that they're having, you know, they're under pressure or they're having a bad period, but going away from home, intimidating atmosphere, the opposition trying to rough you up. Like, it wasn't about how much, you know, how many million they earn a year or how many Instagram followers they have. It was just players sticking up for each other and grinding out. I think that'll give them a massive lift, because the reality is, look, they are very talented, they're very structured, but they will have to go to war again. Not that kind of stuff, but just dig in. Dig in when things are going wrong and play for each other. And I think Pep Guardiola has been around the game long enough to know that every so often something like that isn't a bad thing.
And if you look at it as well, right, so like even with players and fans and in modern day football, getting that connection between a group of millionaires and fans who kind of are looking from the outside, and obviously the fans love the team and all the rest of it, but it's about that everyone talks about it now. It's the, what was it, kind of, I don't know, like the intangibles almost about that, just a bit of a connection. And there'll be fans next time City play in the Champions League, play with Real Madrid now, like, would have seen what their team went through for them, and they kind of realise obviously they want to win, they want to be successful, but it does, it just brings another element to it. Like, people talk so often about Liverpool and Anfield and European nights, and but that's something that's been forged over decades in terms of the success and the history that Liverpool have had in that competition and being at that level. Like, what's happened with City over the last while has been just so alien to City fans. Like, for so long City fans have like hated UEFA because they felt they've had a vendetta against them, like even booing the UEFA Champions League anthem when it's played before games because they feel as if UEFA somehow have it in for Man City because they're like the new money, whereas now you can, this is the competition that they want to win. And it'd still be tough because obviously you've got Real Madrid now as well, but like the season, as I mentioned, like the season, how it could be shaping up is just phenomenal. And like, even you mentioned there in the first question you said about kind of where you stand on all like the beautiful side of football and the ugly side, but like you saw a side to Phil Foden that maybe you hadn't seen before, and again that actually, you're just looking like that bit where he just rolls off the pitch, has that bit of cop on to kind of roll back on, buy that extra few seconds and wind up an opponent. Like, he has all the talent in the world to be the best player in the world, but then if he has that little, it's just streetwise.
Yeah.
Just, and some players don't have it. It's mad. Some players just do not have it. And it's clear that this fella has everything.
And he's so young still.
That's it. And that's even, you listen to Pep Guardiola talk about him, and it's interesting because it's actually, it's very similar, something's been very said about Gavin Bazunio. Just obviously you have to get that link in there, obviously, Man City, or, and you know, especially if you're an RTE here now, but like Guardiola loves, you know, he always talks about that Foden has the ability to forget, so he might show for the ball, make a wrong turn, make a wrong pass, 2 seconds later it's out of his mind. Other players, it plays in their mind, they stop showing for the ball, or they go into areas pretending to show for it, knowing they're not going to get it, whereas this kid just constantly wants the ball, constantly wants to be the one to make the difference. It happened in the first leg against Atletico when he obviously didn't bring him on until the 74th, 75th minute. Within a minute, he's the one creating the goal out of nowhere. And now listen, he's still young, and you don't want to be putting too much pressure on him, but like, he's already been around for a few years, and he is one of their main performers. Like, and this could be the fella who has that, could be the difference from him winning the Champions League this year, and not just because he does, him, Kevin De Bruyne, they are the ones who make the difference in that City team. They
really are. You can actually see, I think we have actually seen him mature as a young person over the last few years, on the pitch, off the pitch, everything. And as you said, he's still so very, very young. Well, lads, we are very nearly out of time, but just a little bit of news before we finish up. In Gaelic Games, GAA and the GPA have agreed a framework to reach a resolution to the ongoing dispute over player expenses after holding what was described as a productive meeting on the issue this morning. In a joint statement released this afternoon, the GAA and the GPA said they would re-engage on the matter in the coming weeks. So that seems to be a little bit of progress, and that probably signals that we might see some player interviews over the weekend. Bernard and David, thank you so much for joining me. We'll be back tomorrow doing live commentary of that Leinster and Connacht game. Tara Kumar is up next.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.